Meeple Might, Episode 12, a podcast spices it up. Hey everybody, Future Andrew here. Just wanted to apologize. I had a little bit of an audio issue this week. Recorded using the wrong microphone. So I apologize to your ears in advance and hope you enjoy listening despite. Roll tape. Welcome to Meeple Night, a podcast about board games past, present, and future. In today's episode, we discuss our recent plays, review Merv from Osprey Games, and finish off by discussing our favorite party-style games. I'm Andrew Caprell, and here's my co-host, Josh Knight.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of Meeple Night. Well, I feel like we've gotten into this rut, Andrew, and 2 weeks have passed, and I haven't seen you that much.
Well, this time I was in Michigan, so it's legit that there's pretty much no way you would have seen me.
No, not when I stayed here in Virginia.
Yeah. But we went back, and it was kind of like a workcation. I went and visited a lot of clients, tried to get a new one. Kids got to spend a lot of time with grandparents. They had a lot of fun doing that. And Nicole had some time off. So, well, it was like a mix of time off. She was at, there was like a remote, conference, I guess, or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in Italy. But it turns out they only displayed them live, and then you had to wait 48 hours. And, you know, live there starting at 9 a.m. is 2 a.m. here. So she... Needless to say, was waking up at 2 a.m. and watching them.
I would have figured she would have.
Yeah, no. She's been watching them now when I'm working at night or whatever. So.
Wow.
So, yeah, we had a good trip back. So, what have you been up to? I didn't even chat with you that much. I'm at a little game.
No. Yeah, it's been a little bit of a busy couple of weeks as we've prepared for the wedding further, but more importantly, the new James Bond came out. Yeah. Absolutely. James Bond, okay? I got to go see the new No Time to Die with my dad, and he reminded me multiple times that he kind of rubbed it in my face that the last one that came out, Spectre, that him and I didn't go see it together, and it was the first time we've ever not seeing a James Bond together when it came out. So we made a point. That was his birthday present this year. I took the day off, so we went to go see it. For those of you out there that haven't actually seen it yet, it's fantastic. It's one of my favorites within the Daniel Craig series. It's very good.
Yeah, there was a time that I tried watching all the James Bonds. It was in the Navy time when, you know, you're deployed.
Plus, he's a commander within the Navy.
Is he?
James Bond is a commander.
When did that happen?
It was one of the early ones. Yeah. Not as Daniel Craig, but you only live twice. He actually dies in the beginning of that, thus the name of the movie. And he's actually given a naval funeral where they drop his body off the side of the ship.
I do remember that,
But yeah, he's a commander. I don't know when it's official. To be perfectly honest, I haven't seen some of the early ones in a long time. But
well, they're hard to rewatch now. Like back in the era of watching stuff on TV without any streaming or anything like that, you know, that was, you'd see something like that come on TV and be like, I'll watch it. Or like your dad, your dad would be watching it, so you would be watching it.
Yep. But, or the fact that he and I both have all of the DVDs.
Yeah, that would also.
Yeah, we're kind of dating ourselves there. Well, that kind of alludes us into my theme for tonight, which is actually going to be based on history. So sort of goes with it. We'll at least run with it. So the first game, at least, I think fits with the genre, and that's going to be the game Blitzkrieg, which is designed by Pablo Mori and published by PSC Games. Now, this claims to be World War II in 20 minutes, and I actually think it succeeds at that. I ended up playing it solo, and it is a Dave Turchi design, and I also played it against my buddy Mike. So you pull tiles from a bag, you decide which of the five theaters you place them in. There are some restrictions of land versus sea for their tanks and warships, respectively, but planes can be placed anywhere. Thematically, that makes sense. And essentially, it boils down to a tug of war as you vie for each location. It's a really neat design, extremely easy to learn, and I understand why Tom Vassell actually gave this game a seal of excellence.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that I figured you would really like. Who did you end up playing with it? Like, I assume it doesn't play solo.
But... It does play solo. Oh, it does. Okay. Yep, I said that's a Dave Turchi design, which I didn't even know he designed the solo mode when I bought it. But I played against my buddy Mike, and... I can't remember. I think he won both of them. He was very good at this for whatever reason. It's fun.
Cool. Yeah. I will probably never try it out, but you know.
I know. Well, I was gonna lead.
No offense to the game design.
I was gonna lead into it's a World War II game, not named Memoir 44, because I know how much you love that game.
All right. Well, then since your theme is history, mostly. We'll see how that goes. At least the first game is history. Then,
wow.
Mine is
cold.
Halloween, mostly. There's definitely. I'll try to think of a way to leave it. It's thematically appropriate for the time of year, man. When we went to Michigan, we brought all of our favorite Halloween type games back with us so that we could play them. So one of those games was the Quacks of Quedlinburg, designed by Wolfgang Bosch, designed by Schmidt Spiele, or North Star Games here in North America. And I think we've talked about this maybe in a list, but it's never been in a recent play. So for those who don't know, it's basically just a push your luck game where you're trying to brew potions out of various ingredients. It's like Snake Oil Salesman, the board game, set in kind of fantasy era, you know. So there's like crow skulls, pumpkins, mandrake roots, spiders, mushrooms, I don't know, what is it, lacewing flies, some sort of purple ghost worm thing. I don't never remember what that is.
Oh, it does have a name, but you're right.
So basically you're throwing these ingredients in a bag and just pulling them out and trying to do it before your cherry bombs exceed 7. Once your cherry bombs exceed 7, you have to stop wherever you're at, and you basically then have to choose between points or money, and that money is what you use to buy better ingredients, and you play over 9 rounds, I think.
Sounds about right.
9 or 11, something like that.
It's 9, yeah.
So we played with the Witch's expansion and without it.
Nice.
I think I like the base game better, or at least don't. Hmm. The only thing I like is the 6 pumpkins, really. I don't know that the Witch's really changes it up enough for me to justify it, but you know, I have it. So. if you're playing with people who know the game well, then it's fine to bring it out. I like the push your luck element to this game, but I think the more I played it, the more it started to wear on me a little bit, because there's one strategy, and maybe it's just the way we play, but like going for lacewing flies, the little black ones, seems to be the dominant thing to do. Pretty much, I have not played with every combination. It's not possible. But
yeah.
There's 6 combinations with the expansion, so maybe the first two are the ones I've played with the most, so maybe those two just aren't that great. The mushrooms and pumpkin thing can work. There's one where if you've drawn 1 pumpkin or 2 pumpkins, then you draw a mushroom, you get 1 extra movement.
Yep.
Or if you draw more than 3, you get 2 extra movement. That one works. Sorry, don't mean to go into nitty gritties, but I like this one more so for playing with non-hobbyist people, I guess.
Yeah, it's an interesting game. I think we've played it probably 20 times total. We own the Witch's expansion. We've never played it.
Oh, wow.
But we've also played multiple different combinations and things like that. I would argue there's actually the Mandrake in there is one of my favorites, depending on what side or, you know, what combination it has. I think the Mandrake could be extremely powerful, but it's also neat because Veronica usually has a different strategy than I do, but we always usually stay more or less neck and neck. That's why I think it's a good game. Yeah. It just came out with a new expansion, The Alchemist, which
I've heard that's supposed to be better. Yeah. I'm probably not going to get it, just because for the amount of time we pull it out, I'm happy enough with the base game.
Yeah. Do you have the upgraded components or little bits?
I do not, which, I mean, our cherry bombs are starting to wear a little bit. But it's hard. I mean, it's for a game that it's not in my favorites, it's just really hard for me to justify spending $50, which is, you know, more than the base game costs. I agree, those are awesome, because you have them, and I've played with them.
Yep.
They're awesome, but it's just hard for me to justify, because it's already hard for me to justify upgraded components.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Well, that's a fantastic choice. We'll see what you think about my next game, which 100% fits the category of history. And that is Rorik, Dawn of Kiev, designed by Stan Kordensky and published by Peacekeeper Games. Now, this is set in the 11th century Eastern Europe, which means it's a Euro game, right? Well, sort of. It does have resource management, but also area control and the best mechanism of all, and I quote, auction programming. Now, if you look on BoardGameGeek, you don't see too many games that has a mechanism like that. And that's why the designer, Stan Krasinski, is brilliant at creating games like this. So in this game, you're going to have different strength workers, 1, 2, 4, and 5. You're going to place those on this kind of auction board that has 5 different actions. And those are muster, move, attack, tax, build, and scheme. And the thing is, when you're playing this game, you're going to, do you decide to use your 5 to ensure you get the muster 3 troops? Or do you place your 1 on the muster because that's going to get triggered first in your turn, but it's also going to give you less troops mustered? So it's hard to explain without a full dedicated review on this. But it's a very unique game that wasn't terribly hard to learn. And I honestly would say give it a shot, especially if you find the Kickstarter version. Peacekeeper Games did a fantastic job with this. I think it's really neat. And it's something that I wasn't in my wheelhouse when I initially supported it on Kickstarter. But Jeremy Howard, one of the content creators out there, said, you know, this is a game to back. And the guy is shooting 100% in my book. So I supported this Kickstarter, and I'm glad I did.
Nice. Yeah, that was one that originally... well, I think both. It's been on Kickstarter twice, right? So the with the expansion and the base game, and didn't catch my attention. Well, I mean, I looked at it, but didn't draw my attention enough to back it. But I think, I mean, you've been singing its praises enough that I should probably find a copy from somebody and give it a try. But I also wanted to comment on your new catchphrase of, and I quote, you should change it to slurp, slurp.
Slurp, slurp.
I just watched what is it? Brooklyn Nine-Nine. The episode where Jake and... why am I forgetting his name? It's not Rudy. That's what it's in my head. Doug Judy.
Yep.
He gets out of prison.
Well, you can't ruin the episode because that's one of the last ones in the final season.
I mean, you don't even know he's in it. I just like this. Slurp, slurp.
Yeah.
It's never been your catchphrase.
It's always been my catchphrase.
All right. So, on to my second game, which is...
That's Halloween themed?
Yep, and history, because I played it in the past. So, that was a good choice of theme. History can be anything.
Wow. You're going to be history. You're going to get kicked off the podcast. Bring Nicole in.
I'm trying to
bring in the dancing lobsters.
I'm trying to channel my inner Nicole and just sow chaos. All right, so my second game is Machi Koro, designed by Masao Suganuma. I'm not sure if that's pronounced correctly. I couldn't find anything for them. For him.
And now I'm curious to see how this is going to fit with Halloween.
Pandasaurus Games. Because a panda dressed as a dinosaur is definitely Halloween.
Oh my god.
It's not Halloween. It's not. I originally had Welcome to Halloween expansion and forgot that we'd already discussed it. So.
Well, all right. So Machikoro.
All right. So this is like one of the original OG engine building dice chucking games. You know, kind of you roll dice to see what you activate on your tableau. So some of the ones popular now, I guess, would be like Space Base, Valeria Card Kingdoms, and Catan's one of those types of games as well.
So, and there's a new one that just came out called Bad Company that apparently blows all the others out of the water.
So there's cards numbered 1 through 12. They all have different powers that get you money in three types of ways. It's either on your turn, on anyone else's turn, or by taking from someone else. And that's based on color. So like blue ones you take from on your turn, green is on anyone's turn, and red is from somebody else. I think that's the color combination. And then you start by rolling one dice, and there's ways that you can roll more as you go, get more powers, build more buildings, types of things. That's basically it in a nutshell. I've played the base game and also the Big City, Big Lights expansion and the 5th anniversary edition as well, which is the version that I played this past week, or actually 2 weeks ago now. I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Really?
This mechanism is not my favorite in general. I know you offered to lend us Space Base once, and we just decided like, no, we don't even want to try it. But, so we
interesting.
We just have a hard time with the. It's not that it's always. It's good that it's always your turn, but the games that often say it's always your turn because you're always doing something.
Yeah.
You're doing something so minimal, like pay attention to what somebody else rolls. And then on your turn in this particular game, all you can do is buy a card. But if you had three crappy turns before that, then on your turn, literally what you did is roll dice and then pass them to the next person. And there are times where in this Machikoro, at least, and Catan, I've found that just bad dice rolls can just lead to a miserable...
Sure.
Like, there's not enough ways to mitigate it. Because in the beginning, when you're rolling one dice, or one die in this game, you just buy cards that are numbered 1 through 6. There's not any... how are you supposed to know? And I happen to buy 4s and 5s, I think, and everybody was rolling 4s and 5s, so I was crushing everybody at the beginning, and then something happened where I did make a bad move or something, and somebody did catch up and win, but it's like there were only two of us even in contention because of some stupid luck in the beginning of the game. So that's what frustrates me with this game.
Yeah, there's a Machikoro 2 coming out. I don't know how that's going to change the base play compared to these. And there's also Machikoro Legacy that came out 2 years ago, I think. But Space Base, we've kind of felt the same way. There is mathematics behind it that the 7 is the most likely to be hit, and then the 6 and the 8, and then everything kind of falls off that bell curve from there. So like 1 is less likely and 12 is less likely. And if whoever gets the kind of middle range early, or if you can replace all of your ships and have upgraded ships there the fastest, you're going to usually get more points. I don't know. We've had very swingy games where Veronica would get 40 victory points before I could get 10. And we played last week Space Base and same thing. I had like 48. She had 12.
Just because like luck of the dice or something.
Like that. I got lucky. She kept rolling 12s, and I had upgraded. I just so happened to upgrade my 12 guy, so I was getting benefits off of her rolls, and they were very good benefits. So it just happens the way it is. It's still an enjoyable game. It's light, easy to remember, but I think I'm going to check out Machikoro 2. I think that might be a fun little game with family.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I think for us kind of hobbyists, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and I mean, that's we played it with Nicole, our family friend now, Nick and his wife, Melanie. And so that's like the type of people that I would think I'd be playing. People who enjoy playing games but are not deep into the hobby enough yet to want to sit down and play for an hour or two. And I don't know, Machikoro is a little bit long for that kind of lucky game. Well, I don't know if Space Base is any better, but
It can be. I don't know what the actual play time is, but speaking of playing time and history, my next game, Imperium Classics or Imperium Legends. Okay. So this is a card game designed by Nigel Buckle and Dave Turchi and published by Osprey Games. Now, I've said this game before on the podcast. It's broken into my top 10. But let me tell you a little bit about this game. So it's a civilization deck-building game where you take a faction, say the Romans, and you develop it through the years from a simple life of hunter-gatherers along the Tiber River through the vast cultured civilization that it became and eventually collapsed. But we won't get to that part. Anyways, you're going to build a tableau of cards that becomes your city and eventually your metropolis. As you progress, more powerful, unique cards are added to your deck. This game really wowed me after the first play. It has the Miko art, it has Dave Turchi design, and it has deck building. That right there is a prime example of brand loyalty that we discussed in the last episode. It's definitely a top 10 game for me, specifically for solo. I don't know if I'd play with others, to be perfectly honest, but I don't care. Like, since I'm predominantly a solo player anyways, I love this game.
Yeah.
I sleeved everything, in fact. Whoa. That says something. Yeah, I know.
Well, there was no other components for you to upgrade, so you had to do that.
No, there actually are. Oh, these little tokens and stuff. I want to upgrade them.
Yeah, I mean, the art in this one looks awesome, and I rewatched Rotto when you talked about it last episode. Yeah, I mean, it looks great. I'm just worried because of late I've not played solo very much, and
yeah,
it seems like there's a lot of interaction and take that. And like the way that I would play it is probably two, and I think for me to enjoy it at multiplayer, I'd probably need to play it at four, maybe three.
Yeah,
but
I wouldn't. Yeah, 100% wouldn't do it. Yeah.
So seems like maybe when I get some time again to play solo for a little bit, if it's before you move, I might be able to borrow it. I still have Destinies waiting for me, so that's how far back I am for anybody.
It's your destiny.
Yeah, all right, so my last one, which is definitely Halloween, the most Halloween of all my games, is Campy Creatures. It's designed by Maddox Schuler and published by Keymaster Games. And this is, I mean, straight up Halloween themed. You guys the players are evil scientists sending out creatures to capture villagers in the village, rather. And it's basically a bluffing set collection style game. So your creatures are represented by numbers 0 through 8, and they're like the swamp creature, Frankenstein's monster, a Demogorgon, mummy, vampire, I don't know, all the classic horror creatures pretty much, werewolf, that type of stuff. And so each of these cards, again, numbers 0 through 8, has different special powers. And then there's villagers that come out, one for every player. So we played mostly four players, so there'd be four villagers out. And you are playing one of your cards to try and capture villagers. Whoever plays the highest card gets first dibs on the villager. But not all the villagers are positive points. There's different ways that they score for set collection. Some are straight up points. There's teenagers where you just want to get the most to get the most points. So you may or may not want the certain ones that are out there. And then also your cards have different powers. So like the 3 is the mummy in the base game. And if anyone plays an 8 and you play the mummy, then you get first dibs, actually. So there's different ways that it's not exactly straightforward as just lay the highest card. And also you play 5 or 6 rounds and then you only play each card once. So it's not like you always have your 8 in your hand or anything. So you're trying to strategically play your highest cards at the right time. This is my go-to Halloween game. I really like this one. It's about 30 minutes. The art's really cool. Like brings me into Halloween mode, right? And I mean, it's probably my favorite one that I played back in Michigan. We played it, I think, 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
And, yeah, this we have the expansion. It's fine. I like everything in the base game the most, really. So expansion's not necessary. I don't know. Did we play this one with you last Halloween? No?
Yeah. No.
I don't know if this is your type of game necessarily. Well, one, you can't play it solo. And it's not great at two. It's not. I don't know. Maybe you would like it because it's head-to-head. So, like, the reason I don't like it at two, you might like it at two. But I no longer have it. It's in Michigan, so I can't lend it to you.
That's okay. I still have a large enough backlog of other games. Well, before we move on to our review game of the night, I have one thing. I looked up some data, and I am curious to see. So we've been hinting at our score breakdowns for our review games over the last couple of weeks. Now, what do you think your average score is? What score do you think you give the most? How about that? We'll do the mode.
The mode? Well, it's a 3 or 4. I'd guess a 4.
Yeah. So you've given 5 threes. See? Surprise here. 4 fours and 2 fives.
Yeah, so 3 is my mode.
Yeah. Because on the episode, we've been saying that you have been given a bunch of 4s.
Yeah.
And in fact, you actually give more 3s than you do 4s.
Yeah, take that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to clear your name a little bit. Now, on my end, I've got 1-1. Yeah. We don't know what game that was. Can't remember that garbage. So 5 threes. So you and I are in line with the 3s. 3 fours and 2 fives. So I'm a little bit harder to impress. Yeah. Slash, I just, that one terrible game that we won't mention. But that does bring us to our next topic to see how are these numbers going to change after we review tonight's review game of MIRV.
Today, we review MIRV, The Heart of the Silk Road, designed by Fabio Lupiano and published by Osprey Games. In MIRV, players are merchants vying to amass power and wealth in the prosperous heart of the Silk Road. Through careful court intrigue, timely donations to the Grand Mosque, and favorable trade deals at the marketplace and caravansary, players attempt to redirect as much of that prosperity as possible into their own pockets. Meanwhile, beyond the city walls, Mongol hordes approach. To prepare, you can instead use your time to construct the city walls or hire guards, which raises your influence and prestige amongst the other merchants by saving the city from certain oblivion. Should MIRV rise to prominence, same as the city once held, or just as the city itself, is this game destined to oblivion and the annals of history?
So for the rules, this is going to be a very broad overview, as there are a lot of moving parts and interesting decisions in this game. So the game itself is played over 3 years and divided into 4 rounds each, so a total of 12 turns. The center of the board is the town square, with 24 building tiles. On your turn, you will decide which row/column you place your quote-unquote master meeple. Then you have 3 options. Place a building on a tile and or activate said tile, deploy a soldier on a tile, or move up the favor track by 1. Let's review each of these real quick. So if you place a building, you can activate that tile, which gives you access to the mosque, the marketplace, where you can gain goods, library, where you can gain scrolls, this is going to be a hard one, caravanserai, anyways, you gain spice cards. You can go to the wall and build walls, surprise, or you can go to the palace. Or you could deploy, where you earn influence by protecting the city. Even more influence if you protect other people's buildings, and you're going to use that influence to obtain different spices and access to completing higher level contracts in this game. Or the last thing you could do is just move up the favor track, which can be used to achieve massive amount of points. Once the 4 rounds are complete, the end of the year is triggered. You score points depending on the number of your buildings in the city and how well you utilize the favor track. At the end of the second and third years, an invasion from those Mongols occurs, and any buildings not protected by a soldier or a wall are destroyed. But don't worry, you can always bribe to protect yourself. Then count the remaining buildings and get a point per building. Also utilize that favor track, like at the end of year one. So there are a lot of other facets to this game, and I'll let you find out them for yourselves after you hear if this is the right game for you or not. Scoring at the end also includes a number of different spices / caravans, which will be added to the rest of your points you've earned during the game. A great score is greater than 100. Or just ask Andrew what he got when we played together.
No idea.
You did really well, man. That's, yes.
Well, I mean, it's also hard to gauge solo.
Yeah, that's also true.
As per Aquatica, 200 points. Lose to Nicole, 70 to 20. Yeah, man, I mean, and the rules for this, for some reason, like when I hear you say it just now, and when I remember reading it the first time, I was like, man, it's fairly straightforward. Like, I think it's just thematically grounded enough, maybe, that it seems straightforward, but... Sorry, I'm jumping the gun.
No, but that still kind of gets a little bit into your first impressions.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I guess, my first impressions from reading the rule book. But, yeah, I mean, otherwise, my first impressions come from the Ian O'Toole art. Is sometimes I really like them, sometimes I don't. This is one of the cases I do. I think the color, I like the color scheme, the green and orange, and I don't know, kind of like it is evocative of the spices kind of colors, like a Century Spice Road color scheme palette as well. I'm sure people that are actually artistic are like, oh my god, that's not even close to the same color palette. Red 47 is not the same as Red 52. Anyways. And I mean, some of the things I like are, like, you know, the board has spots where it tells you to put the cards, like at the caravansary and stuff. I don't agree with where it tells you to put them, but I do like that it has spots for it, just as a help, setup help. But it's definitely missing a player aid, which even before we started, I knew that was going to be a problem. Because, I mean, trying to teach this is just hard without anything to reference. And even the board itself could have player aids on, like, whether it's better symbols or what, but because some of the spots did try to have things that tell you what to do, but I didn't think they made any sense, so I didn't even use them.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, and I think it, you can summarize it in one word: intimidating. The rules are a little complicated, but once you actually start playing, I think you kind of get into the swing of it. But the board's very busy, and there's a decent amount of components, which for you is a lovely thing because they're all in baggies. But it's, you're kind of, it can be very difficult, especially for me, because I don't know if you remember, but I struggled with the marketplace and the caravan. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the caravan. You're like, that's the marketplace, or vice versa. I can't remember which one it was, but it was so hard because the symbol was a bagged spices. And I thought that meant, oh, great, I can go get spices from the caravan. I was like, nope, the caravan action is actually the little camel figure. Ugh.
Yeah, the symbols there were totally backwards. I'm not really sure what the thought process on that was. Even thematically, it was backwards. Like, you're going to the marketplace, which is where you send camels to go to cities that are far away to trade, or you go to caravans to get the spices that are already here. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of spices, those cubes equal spices. I hated it. Poor component choice.
Yeah. I don't even know that they were. They're not.
Oh, I guess you're right. Those weren't spices. Those were just like a random resource.
They're just, they're nothing. Yeah. That was, yeah. And I mean, I know that's in theme too, but that was definitely a miss to not name what they are. Anything.
Yeah.
Blue money, red money, I don't care. Just name them something.
Yeah. Make it's, I like Euro games, but even this one was a little bit too dry for my liking. Now, I will caveat that I'm more of a modern Euro game, not the classics like you grew up with. But the modern Euro, this is a little bit too dry. And that gets into the rules, because they were just so hard to get through. And I think walking through a few turns, to give an example, going back to our last episode of how do you teach a game, I think even with that, despite playing it a few times, every time I've played this game, I've gotten a rule wrong. And like, I've watched Paul Grogan from Gaming Rules, or I forgot what his podcast is, but he did an excellent full-length playthrough, and which I actually thought was 100% necessary in order for me to learn how to play this game, and yet I still couldn't fully grasp these rules.
Yeah, I mean, as far as our review games go, this is the first one in a while that I felt like I've watched Rotto and read the rule book. Usually I can just do one and pull it off. And yeah. We still got stuff wrong. I mean, I think we played it right when Nicole and I played together, but we also had the advantage of you telling us what we messed up. Yeah. So we went back and looked, and then I don't remember, there was something else. You can only buy one of each good at the marketplace. We messed that. Well, we didn't mess it up when we played, but we stumbled across the rule because we were like, what is even the point? We were just discussing, like, why are these all different things? It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason that you need them.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that, it's to show you, because you can only buy one from each place per turn. So that's why. It's just you can have more than one in your possession, but per turn that you execute that action, you can only have one of each. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think that's how I played it, but I didn't remember us playing it incorrectly.
Yeah, I don't know if we did or not, but I know that I didn't remember that being talked about.
So no.
I couldn't say.
So that just goes to show you.
Yeah, the first game was, I mean, that's why I got so many points. We just played with only half the rules.
Yeah. And I forgot to give myself a few points and after the second year. I think I would have been closer to you than you had a huge lead. I think I was close behind you, nipping at your heels.
Your competitive streak was high this past couple weeks. I was getting texted a lot of score stuff.
I'm finally winning games. I'm back on my winning streak in solo. This is great.
Oh, man. All right. So,
well,
getting away
what
from
about
scoring,
the theme?
How about some theme? So I'll do some pros of theme, because I know you're going to be harsher on this. I just generally like drier games, and I like putting my imagination into the theme more. So I like this had a couple paragraphs in the rule book about the history, if you wanted to read it, that were not, there are some games that have like 3 pages to read. It's like, I'm not going to read 3 pages. I'll go read a history book if I want to do that. This was nicely done where it's just a little bit, and then that can spark my interest. I can go use Google to look up Merv after that, which I did. And then, you know, it's fun to learn a little bit of history. But yeah, like you said, the rule book was pretty dry, and I think the rules were thematic. And they could have tied the theme in, and they just didn't. You know, like, the way that when you build walls, you get influence because you protect other people's stuff. I feel like it was either Rotto or us that, or maybe it was you said that, and, like, that's why it makes sense. But I don't think the rule book said that. Like, it makes sense that you get more influence when you protect other people, because everyone's like, oh, look at that selfless person protecting, using their money to protect other people.
Yeah.
And then we talked about the symbols should be switched on the caravansary and marketplace. Nameless cubes were a big downside. Why do different goods exist? I don't know.
I thought you said you were going to say positive things on the theme here.
Yeah, I did. I started with my one positive thing. And my other the contracts, man. Like,
yeah,
the contracts. Who comes to a merchant and it's like, I just want one rare good and one common good. I don't really care what they are.
And get rid of your spice. Yeah, get rid of your cube, just, whatever it is. Yeah. I keep calling it a spice because I'm trying to put theme on it.
So I think they were really close, and it could have been done with a little bit of work. Because I do think that I did feel like a merchant in this game. There was a whole lot of getting these cubes to go trade these cubes in, and if you build up in a certain like neighborhood basically or street, then you can take more powerful actions when you go visit your stalls or go visit someone else's stalls. And I think the thematic I want to say trappings, but that's not it, foundations were there, but they just didn't do the extra legwork to make it more of a modern hero.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a lot of the stuff that I enjoyed, which was the history part. And that's why I did the history during the banter tonight, because I'm always intrigued with learning different cultures. And I think board games do a really good job with that. Some better than others, and some of them aren't necessarily culturally appropriate. But I like a game like this that it does try to get you to learn a little bit more about that city, Merv, just like Rorik did earlier. And I like when it's implemented into a game. And the theme, I thought, was present throughout the game itself, especially with the use of those camels. Or, as I kept using them, was Camel Up or Camel Cup or whatever that game. Yeah, I just kept stacking them. But I think it was neat. But I agree with all your negatives. It did detract a little bit. I think it was almost like they had a good pitch for what the game could be, and then they just left it what it was and didn't continue the theme throughout the development of the actual game mechanics.
Yeah, I agree.
Which leads us into what are the mechanisms of this game. So I didn't have a really good idea of what it was. So I wrote Moncala ? Set collection ? The Board Game Geek page wasn't helpful in this either. So is it a worker placement? No, seriously, like, is it a long-term worker placement when you're putting your buildings out on the stalls? Whatever, I don't care. I really did like using that quote-unquote master meeple, master worker, whatever the heck they called it, and utilizing actions in that column, because I thought that was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
I personally rarely placed a soldier or gained favor, though looking back, maybe I should have gained more favor, because I think that's how you crushed us, by the way. But I did also like the mechanism that if you're the furthest from the next corner, you go either last in the next round or you spin those camels to move up. I think that's a really neat concept. And overall, I thought there was some unique mechanisms, and I think that's why Board Game Geek couldn't classify them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the mechanisms is the shining point of this game to me, in that I don't know. It reminds me of Targi, and I know it's not like Targi at all, really, but just that grid worker placement thought process, in that this though is a longer term grid building than you're doing in Targi, and it's only one at a time, right, instead of three at a time, and I thought that was really cool and really unique, and still haven't really seen. I think this came out almost 2 years ago, and or two Essence ago rather.
Yeah.
Maybe it was only one Essen ago.
I think it was last year.
Yeah. But I haven't seen anything else really utilizing the grid placement thing since then. So I think that I would like to see this explored more. And even if there's an expansion to this game that like can bring that theme out a little bit more and maybe make some better contracts and utilize those different. It felt like there was an expansion built into this game, and they took it out.
Hmm.
Honestly, but
interesting you say that. So first off, just to further get to the bottom of it, Merv did come out in 2020.
Okay.
I think it was an Essen release because it is a Euro game. Essen's predominantly Euro style, and sometimes we forget because 2020 was such a nightmare. But the other one is there is a solo, or there is an expansion in the works. I'm trying to actually get on the playtesting for that.
Oh, nice.
Because I think it would be interesting. Plus, with my, I think my experience from playing this and critically reviewing it, I think it might be beneficial. So working on that. So I do know there is an expansion in the works. So what'd you think of the flow? Because I'm curious, because I kind of debated on this topic.
I thought the first round can be pretty slow, but after that first round, I think it's the flow is pretty quick. And I don't know, maybe it's because we played with the three of us and none of us have too bad of AP that I didn't feel like when we played our three-player game, it suffered, but I could see where it would.
Yeah, for sure.
When we did our two-player game, our first two turns were both really slow because we now knew, like, to think about the grid placement and how it's going to affect you longer term.
Yeah. Plus, you had to deal with the... I'm forgetting the name of the...
The Vizier, High Courtier or something. I think it's the...
Yeah, High Courtier. Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh, the Vizier is the solo guy. Soloma.
Yeah, it's like the corrupt Vizier or whatever it is. So I agree with you. I think you and I are like seeing eye to eye on this game, which is pretty impressive because based on our scores that we give most games, it seems we differ a little bit. But I wrote variable for the exact same things that you said. And I actually wrote that despite this being a worker placement, quote unquote, light game, I never lost an opportunity to advance each turn for the exact reasons you said. The only time that I try to anticipate, hey, you see that I've got a juicy spot coming up. If you take that, where am I going to go after that? It only affected me on that one, on the last turn when I played with you and Nicole, because Nicole took my juicy spot and I had like a second great location lined up that I still got because I think I wanted to build stuff, if I remember correctly. So like I still got to build things. So even though she took the primo spot, I still had a really good backup plan. And even then, if say you took that spot or something, I probably still had a third best backup plan because I was trying to plan for that last turn in that first round. So I took a little bit slower turn initially because I was planning for the end of the game because I needed that flexibility in order to kind of get a bunch of points or to protect myself.
Yeah. And I mean, that this is circling back to mechanisms a little bit, but that's like the importance of camels in the early game too, making sure you get camels because that was something we didn't really realize. And once you had most of the camels,
hoarded them.
Like there was nothing... I don't know. It didn't break the game, but it made it a different strategy, right? Because we had to go to the later columns or rows to even have a chance at going first. And that's and I don't think we did that enough because I think I went for the middle columns and rows. But we should have done that to force you to spend some of the camel. So that's like one of the strategies, I think. You have to be mindful of the camels.
I think I had a max of 7 camels, but I held on to them until that last year when I really needed specific actions to fulfill my goals, my contracts, whatever it was, and that's when I spent the camels. So length of game, I asked you and Nicole and Veronica last time, how long do you think our three-player game of Merv took?
It's probably 80 to 90 minutes.
Just under. It was like 75 minutes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Which goes into exactly what I wrote down, which it's quicker than you expect.
Yeah, for sure.
And this game reminded me of another fantastic game, Underwater Cities. Finite turns.
Yeah.
And you look at it initially and be like, I only have 12 turns. This is going to be a quick game. Lost Ruins of Arnak has that too. There's 5 rounds. You think it's going to be quick. But when you actually get your engine kind of going, these turns, the game still lasts a little bit longer, but it's still not as long as you would expect if you look at this board. So it's still a quick game. And I thought that I would say was be a plus of this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I thought that our two-player game took us a little over 60 minutes. And so that's... Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big pro of this game is that how quick it goes. And I mean, and that's probably why the flow at the beginning of the game is a little bit slow, because you're looking at it thinking, oh gosh, I only have 12 turns. I gotta do as much as I can right now.
Yeah.
So how about fun? I'll let you go first on this one.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed our three-player game. Even though we got stuff wrong, even though I was a little flustered with certain things, I liked it. Because it has some combo building, which is nice. Especially when you start to fulfill those contracts. Because then you can get a soldier that you put there, and all of a sudden then you move up on the... not favor, what's the other track called? Influence track, you get to move up on that. See, that's part of the rules too. That's a little confusing, all this language. But I loved utilizing the scrolls to give you a reward or a discount depending on how many scrolls you've accumulated. I think it's really fun. I think you get these kind of combos and this engine triggering mechanisms. I liked it. I really did.
Yeah, I mean, I think fun is a weird way because like Euro-y games generally... fun. I don't know. I was thinking about this. I was like, I enjoyed it a lot, but it's like one of those highs you get from thinking and crunching through stuff rather than like, yes, high five, fun. I agree. This was a lot of fun. And even at two, I think it does a really good job with the courtier of mimicking three-player scaling. It's not quite as good because, you know, you don't have a third person strategically thinking about, like, oh, I want to place here in order to do this. So you can't, and you can predict them a little bit, at least in terms of turn order. You can predict what they're going to do. So, you know, it's not perfect, but it's good at shrinking the board, at least.
Yeah. And that alludes into the solo. The solo, it's the same thing, except you actually do have an automa, but they're still controlling that. What was the person called again? The
Vizier? Courtier?
Vizier, whatever it is. Yeah. Anyways, I actually have mixed feelings about the solo mode. I've played it twice, and it's set at one difficulty, and that difficulty is impossible. So I'm pretty sure... I did a lot of research on this. I went to a lot of message boards. That's actually how I learned about the expansion and where you could actually sign up to try to play test for it. But I'm pretty sure anybody out there who claims to have won the solo of this game did not play a rule right. Because I hung close with this AI. I feel like I'm pretty good at this game. I really do. And I hung close with this AI through the first 2 years. And then I got smoked. Absolutely smoked in the third round.
Do they favor a certain strategy or something?
Nope. They favor kicking your ass. That's their strategy. It's really the favor track, I think, because it haunted me again. You utilized it, and the AI, if you're going to say they favor anything, it's going to be that favor track. Because you have to play an immaculate game to even come close to beating this guy, and guess what? You're not. Because the AI is easily going to score over 100 points, and on average, people are sitting between 44 and 61 points online.
Wow.
They're getting smoked. Wow. Everybody. So I think I'm afraid to say it, even though I did like the combos and everything, I'm not going to play this solo ever again.
Yeah. I mean, I think three was really good. I would like to play this at four. I think it'd be good at four.
I could see that.
And I mean, I would definitely play it at two. I think it probably goes back to the, like you said, it's kind of one of those more traditional dry Euros, and those games generally didn't even have solo modes, so
yeah,
you know, it might have just been kind of added in because we're in that time zone where people are. This was kind of at the beginning, I feel like, of when solo modes were getting really hot. Maybe not. Maybe it's,
yeah. Yeah, I can't remember what other games Fabio Lepiano has created.
Oh, gosh darn it, we talked about it too on the night that
I can't recall, but that kind of goes into replayability, and I think it has a finite replayability. There isn't much variability other than how the building tiles are arranged, and I will say, we brought it up last episode, that how frequently are you going to be getting this to the table? And I think given how difficult the rules are, I think I would probably rather learn a different, new, complex Euro game than to pull this thing back out.
Gotcha. Yeah, so this is not a sign of the game. I also left this one in Michigan, but this is more, we're moved, in process of moving, you know, just leaving games there when we bring them. So I shouldn't have mentioned it at all. But anyways, this is, I'm not sure which is my bigger gripe. I think this is my bigger gripe than theme, is that limited variability in setup. Not having different contracts come out, not having different scrolls, or like make the scrolls be shuffled and then you just get whichever one is face up. The variability literally comes from shuffling the caravansary deck, which isn't that variable because there's only four different types of spices, and then how you arrange those tiles. And I don't know that, and I don't know, maybe it does change the game a lot, but I didn't feel like it changed. I only played it twice, so I can't comment enough, but I think it is replayable, but I think it's highly strategic, so would have one of those, you know, play it 5 or 6 times and then wait for an expansion to play it again. But if an expansion would come out and have contracts that have individual goods on them and, you know, have like 40 contracts and you shuffle 5 into each deck or something, I don't know. I feel like there's ways to put variability in this game that wouldn't take too much work. Starting powers. End game objectives, that can, you know, my typical things that I like that CGE always does. So just contact CGE, they'll tell you.
Things to address with an expansion, like individual player powers or individual player objective.
Yep.
So it forces you, hey, you probably like going up the mosque and flavor tracks. Instead, focus on building walls and getting as much access to this marketplace or something like that.
That is my favorite way. I like the objectives more than the starting powers. Both is fine too.
Yep, something to spice it up. See what I did there?
See what you did there.
So what about scoring?
Oh, scoring. Here on Meeple Night, we score on a 5-point categorical score system. Someday I'll actually have a way to say that. But
the fact that you can do caravanassery, whatever, I can't say that, and yet you...
I mess up categorical every time.
Categorical.
So we start with a 1, which is not fun. I would pass a pass to play. 2, game is okay, but not likely to hit the table. 3 is a good game, worth playing in the right situation. 4 is a great game, almost always willing to play and need to have access to it. And 5 is an amazing game, among my favorites. Must own it.
How about you go first? Oh. I'm usually the first one.
All right. So this one, cutting down to brass tacks, was almost a 5 for me, basically. I really like the mechanisms of this game. The variability takes it down to a 4. And then the theme, while it does annoy me, it doesn't bother me enough that it affects my score, in this case anyways, because I think just going into a Euro game, I just have different expectations probably. And so it's more just a gripe when we're talking about theme that it affects my score. So I'm going to settle on a 4 and bring that to be my mode now.
Wow.
Which is a great game, almost always willing to play and need to have access to it. I think an expansion that addresses the variability or some of the theme would probably bring it up to a 5 for me. But and if said expansion comes out, I will seek it out. So.
Wow. I will admit, I am truly torn with my score. I think there's some major highlights, including the mechanisms and the theme. Well, most of the theme, minus those darn cubes. But the major detractors, though, were the iconography at times and the rules. And I almost wish one of the actions, say the favor track, wasn't included. I wish it was a little watered down slightly. Keep the other actions instead, as this theme has got more complex than it needed to be, in my opinion. Or maybe not. Maybe not include those contracts instead of the favor track. Whatever. Because the bottom line is, I liked my time playing the game. It was actually one of my favorite games I've ever played at your house. But at the same time, I could still sit here and say I could easily give this game a 2. because there are just too many red flags, which will keep me from bringing it back to the table myself. So maybe that expansion does help, but as it currently stands, I'm really only going to play this game if others want to play it, specifically three players. Yeah. So that's going to land me at a three.
Yep. Yeah, I mean...
And that... Yeah.
Yeah, if it's not good solo, then it's not surprising to me, right? Like, if a game's not good solo, there's no reason for it to be a high score for you, because that is your favorite way to play generally, I think.
It is, and it's easier for me to get things to the table, and even with Veronica and things like that, we're going to play a little bit lighter games. I love Euros.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have a Dave Turchi design it, or just something like an easy-to-run AI that makes a competitive experience, I'm probably not going to play it. I'd rather play Anachrony or something else.
Right.
You know what I mean? So regardless, Merv, you've got some highlights, and you definitely have spiced up our gameplay and our table, and you've earned a score of a 7, and I have run that analogy into the ground. So thank you, Merv,
slurp, slurp.
From Meeple Knight. Slurp, slurp.
And finally, we'll take some time to discuss some of our favorite party-style games.
I thought of this topic with the wedding coming up, and Veronica wanted to play games with guests the night before the ceremony. So I started to think of extremely easy-to-learn games for a large group that can be enjoyed by hobbyists and non-hobbyists alike. Now, this is not an all-inclusive list. Just more or less games that I've either played or seen commonly played at conventions, aka Dice Tower Spectaculars. But these games don't have to be party games per se, but they will meet in my list. We'll see how Andrew does. They're going to meet these three criteria. Easy to teach to a variety of people. Lack of attention / disruptions don't end the game. And they're fun to play, and it's not necessarily about getting the most points. So based on this criteria, sorry, Veronica, but the mind doesn't count. This is just a list of games where the last game mentioned isn't necessarily better than the first game mentioned. It's just a list of games that fits the category. Or they call it a game pie?
Every slice of pie is just as good. Although the last one, you know, I think psychologically is not generally as good. Because due to diseconomies of scale.
Yeah, unless it's a chocolate meringue pie.
Aren't you're having pie. Isn't that what you said at your wedding?
We are having pie at the wedding. That's the other reason I thought this was a cool... I'm trying to make as many crossovers as possible here.
Yeah, my games mostly fit that criteria. I think. The second one may be debatable, but I think it's... No, I think I meet all those criteria. I'm happy saying I do.
Okay.
These are all Halloween.
So what's your...
Just kidding.
Yeah, Halloween. Oof. They were rough. What's the honorable mentions?
Because
I want to see...
Yeah, so I have a couple of honorable mentions because they're games that are probably my favorite that I would consider in this category, but I feel like we're edge cases, and some people would say are not party games, or like the lack of attention thing is probably the main thing that would mess them up. So, and I think I've talked about all of these on the podcast. One Night Ultimate Werewolf or Alien, which is predictable. That one I like in a party situation because it's short. Rail Pass, also discuss that. Those are 10-minute rounds. And a favorite of this podcast, with a toilet bowl seat, Gravity Warfare.
Yep. That is a good one. Yeah. You'll make Jeff
that one just has
that
a player count thing that I felt was maybe not great for, because I think it only plays 4 or 5, right?
I don't play with the rules. I literally brought it to the bachelor party. We pulled it at our last bar. We pulled it out and we were already a little tipsy, and it was just still stupid fun. Now Rob didn't get it, but that's okay. Rob doesn't get most games. I love you, Rob, but you're not
I mean,
as quick to
what's
pick up
not
a
to
few
get
games.
About it. You're picking up spaceships with chopsticks and putting them on a galaxy that's shaped like a toilet seat. I don't get it.
While drunk. Sorry, tipsy. Well, the game that I thought is my honorable mention, which just so happens to be Eric Summers from the Dice Tower, one of his favorite games, is Strike the Dice Game. Stupid game where we've never mentioned it on this podcast, but all you're doing is it's a box and you throw dice into it. And if you have a match, you take those dice out and those are your dice for the next time to throw dice into a box.
That's like war, right? Like you go until somebody has all the dice.
Yep.
Is it?
And I don't know. It's weird.
I think they have thematic versions of Strike, don't they?
Harry Potter.
I thought there was a Harry Potter Strike. I don't know how they did that.
They throw Harry Potter on everything. That IP is like Marvel. It really gets around.
Yeah.
But it's stupid. It's fun. I played with my parents. Veronica and my mom are better than my dad and I at this. We don't know why. It's stupid fun. So speaking of stupid fun, what's a party game for you?
All right. So my first slice of pie is going to be Concept, which is a 2013 game. The designers, I believe, are Gaetan Bourgeonneau and Alain Rivollet from Repost Productions. My French isn't that great, so that's the best I can do.
Apologize to any French listeners.
Yeah. Technically, I think they're Belgian, but it looks like French names. Anyway, so Concept is this game where there's two people who are trying to give hints to a certain word that I'm pretty sure you draw from a deck. It's been a while since I've played. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're putting out hints as to this is this consistency or this color, mm-hmm. or is not this, does not make this sound and stuff like that. And I don't know, it's kind of like a word game. As soon as you know what it is, you're like, oh gosh, of course. But throughout the whole thing, you're telling somebody they're stupid because they, this doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah, it's just kind of quickly, an example would be a B. And you have a certain set of hints. So you would put your pawns on a yellow, on a black, and flight, or small, maybe if you had four. I can't remember how many you have. But you would look at that and be like, huh, oh, it's a B. That would fit. But another one would be Abraham Lincoln. Yep. You would be tall, and maybe you would use the color black because his beard is black, his black hat, or something like that. So you would just kind of go some generalisms. That's what you get. Or you would say the concept. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a concept would made my short list, but I've actually never played it. I've learned it multiple times to teach to people, but I've never played it. So
that's hilarious. That's hilarious. You basically just taught something that I said.
I've wanted to play it, and yet I haven't had an opportunity to do so. Because every time we brought it to my parents' house, they're like, let's play something else. Strike. I own it.
You own it. Oh, yeah. We can totally play it. I don't know if we'll be able to play.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do then. But you know what? One game we could play? Pitch Car, which is designed by, here's real French, Jean Dupoel. My French is awful. I don't speak any French. My mom thinks she speaks French. She doesn't. Anyways, here's one I can pronounce. Eagle Griffin Games. That's who publishes this. What is this? It's a dexterity racing game where you set up the track however you want, with expansions adding loops, jumps, and other obstacles. And you literally flick a disc around the track. That's it. I just taught you how to play this game. And I've heard it's very popular at conventions, and I'm particularly excited to play it because we have a huge table at our wedding venue, and I can make this awesome, elaborate track. Veronica and I played it. We really enjoyed it. And I think this would be fun to play at a party.
Yeah, you told me that it was going to be at the wedding, so I have not played this, so I really want to get a play in while we're there. So, it's like a classic convention game.
It's flicking disc. What can go wrong?
Yeah. I mean, every dexterity game is always awesome.
Yep.
Okay, that's a extreme that I don't want to lock myself into, but there it is.
You've heard it here. Every dexterity game is a 5.
So my next one is Telestrations, which is a 2009 game published by USAopoly, and no design or credit is given on BGG, so I don't know. This one just barely made it in when I chopped off one of the other ones into the honorable mentions, but I every time I've played this has been a lot of fun. It's basically telephone mixed with Pictionary kind of thing, where one person, everybody has a card that they draw, and they have to then start or draw that thing on a notepad. Then you pass the notepad, somebody looks at it, flips the page over, writes what it is. Then they pass that, and the person sees what it is, flips it over, draws that word. Pass it, flip it over, write, that person writes what they think the second picture was. And it goes around however many players have it until it goes all the way to the beginning. And you see if you guys were able to get it right. I mean, if you've played the game Telephone, it's kind of that type of thing, except drawing with people who are most likely not great artists. So, it's, you know, always going to bring some fun. Best indulged while drinking, I think.
Although, you could play this sober as well.
Yeah, still probably.
It is. It made my list, believe it or not. And...
Crossover.
And I've played it with multiple different groups. I played it with my parents. We had a lot of fun. My dad's actually a really good artist. My mom is not. My dad can't figure out what something is from a drawing. So it's a really interesting dichotomy, especially if you put my mom first and then my dad. You don't know what's going to come back to you. We've also played with our neighbor Rachel, and I clearly drew a cannon with a captain, like a sea captain. Oof. Not even close what she wrote, but I think that's why it's so, it's like slapstick fun, and I think you're guaranteed a laugh when you play this game. And again, it meets the criteria. It's not about points. It's just about drawing fun stuff, doing whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great game, and I'm glad it was on your game pie and made mine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing about most of my games. There's one that has points. The rest are no scores. And I'll get to the point one right now, which is Love Letter, designed by Seji Kanai and published by AEG, Alderac Entertainment Group. So this, the theme is not really that relevant, but you're dealt cards. I only played with the expansion, so I don't actually know what it is in the base game. I think 1 through 8, and it's 0 through 8 with the expansion. And 8 is the princess, and on your turn... you draw from the deck of cards that are not dealt out, and you have to choose either to play the card that you had in your hand or play the card that you just drew. And each card has a different set of abilities. You are trying to end the game with either the highest value card or the princess in your hand. And if you do that, you gain a heart, and then the first person to gain 3 hearts wins, I think is what it is. Or you can just play as many rounds as you want. Which is, it just depends what type of situation you're in. This is the one that's kind of borderline on as far as not paying attention kind of thing. Because you kind of need to be paying attention. Technically, all cards are displayed, so you don't have to count cards or anything like that. So, but you still kind of have to have some focus. So this was my other borderline case, but we've played this a lot in a lot of party situations. It's more... typically board game parties. I think most of the time we've gone with this game knowing, I mean, this is, we like playing this at 6 to 8 players, but we always know we're playing board games when we go and play this game. So it's not like sitting at a social party and like, hey, let's play Apples to Apples or whatever, you know, let's play Love Letter.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And they also have a lot of intellectual properties with Batman, apparently. Guys from Dice Tower love that one. And then, of course, Marvel had to be thrown on there, too. Surprisingly not, but I'm sure it's coming. So, next one.
Trademark.
We'll figure that one out. Maybe we'll publish it ourselves. My next one that made my game pie is a game called Just One, which is designed by Ludwig Rowdy and Bruno Shatar. I butchered that, I'm sure. Sorry, guys. And it's published by Repos Games. So this is a cooperative deduction game where one person must guess the mystery word after the others have written a word, a clue word, on their card. But be warned, if any clues are identical, they're erased. So this is a game that actually just recently came out, I think a couple 2 years ago or so. It was nominated for the Spiel, and
yeah,
there you go.
2018. It came out in 2018, so I think it's 2018
yeah. or 19. Everybody has talked about this game, and it looks so much fun. I bought it off Amazon recently pretty cheaply, so this is one that we're going to play at the wedding, we think, at least at some point. It just looks like good, stupid fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so much good, stupid fun that it is also on my list. Two crossovers.
Yes!
Bing, 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 bing. Yes. We have played this, I think we played it last Christmas, or maybe it's two Christmases ago. Probably two, because with the COVID of it all, I think it's probably two Christmases ago. Anyways, yeah, it's a lot of fun. This is one that my dad enjoys playing. He's not a big board game player, and so anytime he specifically asks for playing this game, so that's when you know it's a real good one.
Yeah.
I mean, we literally played through the entire deck. We sat there for like 2 hours playing it. So,
wow.
Probably not the best way to play it. It's probably better to play 30 to 45 minutes. So we've seen a lot of the cards. But yeah, it's one of those word games that is not as much of a thinker as Codenames or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely enjoy this one.
Oh, I like it. I think my next one, though, isn't going to make your list.
All right.
Wavelength. Perfect.
No,
all right.
No.
So Wavelength, which is designed by Alex Hoag, Justin Vickers, and Wolfgang Wusch, and published by Asmodee. Although I thought
you
it was published by...
You can't just throw V's in place of W's and call it German. Okay.
It is.
Get it.
Asmodee publishes this, which I actually didn't know that Asmodee has like gobbled up a whole bunch of companies, but yeah, according to Board Game Geek, Asmodee is the publisher. All right, whatever. Wavelength. Social deduction guessing game split into two teams. One player will look at this cool gadget that provides a spectrum of different points. The clue giver has a binary card which says hot or cold, for instance, and their team needs to put the dial near the hottest spectrum but not, say, the max. So you may give a clue of coffee if you want them to get like hot, but you didn't say lava to be like the hottest thing on earth. Mm-hmm. And your team would be, if they thought lava that level heat, they would be outside the scoring window, for instance. As you could tell, it's kind of hard to explain this. You kind of have to have the product in front of you, but I think it's easy to play once you actually see it.
So what are they, you're trying to guess the position of the wavelength? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yep. So there's a target. If you get them to hit right on, say, a 43 degree angle, that equals 10 points. And a 58 degree angle equals, you know, 8 points or whatever. Like there's that spectrum. Yeah. Yeah. There's that range. So you're trying to get them to hit it as close to the center as possible. And if they totally miss it, I think the other team has the ability to like Family Feud style of steal and for them to put it within it.
That seems pretty cool. I don't know why I didn't pursue this one. That seems like a great like family holidays style party game where you don't need to pay a lot of attention or like be a trivia whiz or anything like that, or word person even, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, if you're having this at the wedding, then I'm definitely going to... there's too much to seek out already. Dang it.
I know. I think we're going to bring it. It's one of those sort of like when you go over to a friend's house or a game night, you bring like five games, you play one maybe.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring a bunch of stuff. 100% pitch car is going to be played, but maybe some of these other ones. But what's another one we could play?
All right, so my last slice of pie, I don't know if this will be crossover, I think you own it, is Dixit, published by Jean-Louis Rubira, published by Libelude. Apparently, French and Belgian people are really good at making party games, based on...
And Americans are very bad at pronouncing their names. Sorry, everybody from Belgium... And France.
Equally true. So the Dixit is kind of like apples to apples with pictures, basically. So somebody has a picture that they're trying to get everyone else to guess, and they say one word or we allowed like Harry Potter or whatever, you know, some proper noun. And then everyone picks from their hand of, I don't remember how many, 5 or 7 cards in their hand that are also showing pictures. And everybody places out a picture. Then you flip them up. Everyone gets to guess who is the one that the person who said the word is. So if I said Harry Potter and we all put out cards, this was a frequent occurrence. It's like when we play code names. Harry Potter's always a code word. There's like a thing with a bunch of keys that are flying around.
Harry Potter.
You know, there's one with a cauldron in it, one with the witch's hat, and then you're like, oh, crap. So if you guess the right one, then you get the most points. And if you, but if everybody guesses the right one, then the person who put the thing out gets the least points. I don't know. The points aren't really that relevant.
It's whose line is it anyway?
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun doing it with pictures instead of just straight up words like apples to apples. Though it does get apples to apples can become cards of against humanity anyways when you play with adults who are drinking.
Yeah.
Dixit can't. So it's a little bit more family friendly proof, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm also flattered that you think I own every single board game. I do not have Dixit, believe it or not.
Do you own Scrabble?
Yes, multiple copies.
Multiple copies. We only have one left.
I think we have like 2 or 3, but that was also, that's like sentimental for my mom and I. We used to always play Scrabble, yeah. But
my so last that's game, your last one?
Yeah, it's Scrabble, surprise, which is published by Hasbro Games and is designed by I Don't Care. No, my last game is one that I've mentioned on the podcast before, and that's Pictures, which is designed by Christian and Daniela Storr and is published by Rio Grande Games here in the States. So, mentioned in the last episode, it won the Spiel back in 2020. This is a game where you've got a grid of 16 pictures on a 4x4 grid. You are assigned one secretly. You're going to use components to create the image of your clue for people to guess. What components do you have? Well, good question, Andrew. You're going to get those crappy cubes from Merv. You're also going to have a shoelace, clip art, blocks, and sticks and stones. But no broken bones. Anyways, it's a fun game. It's great for a diverse crowd. Play with my family. I've played it with Jeff and Sarah. It's cool. It's a neat little concept. And it kind of takes code names and adds those little physical elements. Because it kind of allows you to draw stuff and whatnot with those components. It's neat. It's a game that we really enjoy.
Nice. Yeah, that's another one that I have to seek out. I think that win the Spiel or just was nominated this past year.
No, it won in 2020.
Yeah, 2020, yeah. So
the only reason it's not as popular here in the States is nobody can find it. One Eye Jax had a used or like a damaged copy that I picked up pretty cheaply. It's now starting to come here. Like I saw it in Barnes and Noble a couple of days ago. So maybe there's hope for it to start coming around, especially with the same or a designer duo creating Juicy Fruits. Like their name may start to strike gold, but it's a cool game.
The holidays coming around now this year with more
maybe
people.
You can see people.
Yeah, being able to go. Yeah, cool. Yeah, so these will be fun. We'll get to play some of these in a week, a little over a week.
A little over a week. Veronica will finally be able to put a ring on it. That's how that song goes, right? Well, hopefully that gives everybody out there an idea of party-style games. It also is a little brief window into, we don't always play these heavy games such as Merv. Yeah. That there is more to this hobby than those complex games. And you can still have a lot of fun playing board games that's not named Scrabble or Life or Monopoly. Yeah. Well, anyways, I'm going to circle back to your theme for the night, which was Halloween games. And for our listeners out there, for our next review game, we'll actually be discussing a loosely themed Halloween game. But you'll have to tune in a fortnight to determine what that game's going to be.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
And good luck.
Thanks for listening to Meeple Night. Today's episode was recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia on October 19th, 2021 and uploaded using Anchor. Our theme music is All Night by Declan DP, provided by Audio Library Plus, which provides free and safe music for content creators. For all the latest from Meeple Night, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook group, or email us at meeplenightpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so until then, dream a little dream of games.